In a world where gods wage war and mortals bear the consequences, 18-year-old Iris Winnow fights for her place at the Oath Gazette. Relegated to writing obituaries while her rival Roman Kit covers prestigious stories, Iris struggles with more than professional frustration. Her brother Forrest has disappeared into the war between the gods Dacre and Enva. Her mother drowns her sorrows in alcohol, and their family heirlooms are sold one by one to fund her mother's addiction. In her loneliness, Iris continues a childhood ritual, writing letters to Forrest and sliding them under her wardrobe door. Then something magical happens. The letters receive responses, not from Forrest, but from a mysterious correspondent who signs as Carver. Through this enchanted typewriter connection, Iris forms a deep bond with someone who understands her fears and dreams. Their anonymous exchange creates a sanctuary where vulnerabilities can be shared without judgment, where words build bridges between souls. Neither knows that this correspondence will become their lifeline as divine warfare escalates, pulling them both into its destructive path and testing whether words alone can preserve humanity when gods themselves have abandoned compassion. "This isn't Forrest," reads the first mysterious reply to Iris's letter, launching her into an inexplicable relationship. Without faces or names, Iris and her correspondent share increasingly intimate thoughts about their hopes, fears, and responsibilities. Their typewriter connection becomes Iris's emotional sanctuary, where she expresses hidden vulnerabilities, her worry for Forrest, frustration with her mother, and writing ambitions. This correspondence strips away social expectations. When Iris writes to Carver, though she doesn't yet know this name, she's simply herself, not the struggling obituary writer or an alcoholic's daughter. Similarly, Roman sheds his privilege and family expectations. Their words shimmer with an otherworldly quality, the paper itself seeming magical. "Everyone wears armor," Iris writes. "It's how we protect ourselves." Yet through these letters, both gradually remove their protective layers. The wardrobe becomes a portal between two souls seeking genuine connection amid divine conflict, showing how we often reveal our truest selves to strangers before those we see daily. The devastating conflict between Dacre, god of the underworld and healing, and Enva, goddess of skies and music, forms the brutal backdrop of this story. Their feud erupted when Enva escaped Dacre's underworld using forbidden songs, shattering divine balance and igniting his vengeful pursuit across Western territories. Dacre's supernatural hounds prowl nightly streets, forcing blackouts, while his aetherals, twisted creatures combining wyvern and shadow, conduct devastating bombing raids. Society transforms through rationing, conscription, and censorship. Even music is banned due to its connection with Enva's power. Competing newspapers represent different approaches. The Oath Gazette minimizes the conflict as a Western borough problem, while the ink-written Tribune documents brutal truths through war correspondence. This conflict serves as both literal war and metaphor for struggles against unchecked power, creating the perfect environment for Iris's journey through questions of journalistic integrity, moral duty, and truth's cost in a world where stories function as both salvation and weapon. How do you write about war? How do you capture the smell of blood and gunpowder, the sounds of screams and explosions, the sight of bodies torn apart, and make readers thousands of miles away feel it? This question haunts both Iris and Roman as they document war's atrocities. Their articles become acts of bearing witness, refusing to let soldiers die unacknowledged. At the Tribune, Iris confronts her role's moral weight. Effective reporting means capturing humanity within horror. Her front-page article sparks public debate beyond Avalon Bluff. The novel explores journalism's complexities, witnessing trauma, ensuring accurate representation, and maintaining objectivity while remaining human. When Iris helps injured soldiers write letters home, she fulfills journalism's core purpose, connecting human experiences across distance. Through Iris's nightmares, Roman's alcoholism, and their colleagues' coping mechanisms, we see how carrying others' stories marks the storyteller. This burden serves as both historical record and moral compass when gods themselves have abandoned humanity. Grief never really goes away, Roman writes to Iris after her mother's death. It becomes a shadow you carry as life grows brighter around it. This understanding permeates the novel as characters navigate loss. Iris mourns her mother's death and emotional absence. Roman carries his sister's drowning, while Forrest's disappearance drives Iris's journey. Rather than presenting neat stages, the novel shows grief's messiness, how it ambushes unexpectedly and transforms but never vanishes. When Iris dreams of her mother saying, "I see you now," it captures both the persistent presence of those lost and the painful recognition they're truly gone. The novel explores anticipatory grief through Forrest's unknown fate, creating a limbo where Iris can neither mourn properly nor move forward, becoming like wearing shoes that are too small and a lump of ice in your chest that never melts. Ultimately, grief becomes transformative when shared. When characters comfort each other or exchange letters about their losses, these moments of witnessed grief create connection rather than isolation. Against the backdrop of divine war and suffering, love emerges as defiance. Iris and Roman's relationship develops through multiple channels: professional rivalry, anonymous correspondence, and growing in-person connection, creating a bond that exists in both written words and physical reality. Their marriage before battle becomes both personal and symbolic, declaring that human connection can flourish even in darkness. When Iris questions whether she deserves happiness while others die, Roman insists, "Joy isn't a crime. It's what we're fighting to preserve." Their wedding in Marisalt Pardon with borrowed flowers affirms that love remains possible even in war's shadow. The novel's devastating final tragedy, Roman's apparent death as Iris is taken away, underscores love's vulnerability while suggesting its endurance beyond physical presence. The epilogue's hint that Dacre may have saved Roman creates both hope and complications, reinforcing how we maintain humanity when gods and mortals seem bent on destruction. In a world of destructive gods and suffering mortals, our most divine quality may be our capacity to witness each other's lives with attention. Characters find meaning by ensuring experiences aren't forgotten. Iris creates meaning through obituaries, soldiers' letters, and battlefield documentation, transforming isolated suffering into shared understanding. This theme culminates when Iris comforts dying Lieutenant Lark by recounting myths and listening to his story about the Sycamore platoon carving names into a tree. As keeper of their memory, she transforms his lonely death into a connected human moment. Bearing witness becomes profound compassion. The magical typewriters connecting Iris and Roman symbolize how words bridge all separations, including death. Through writing, Iris creates continuity beyond physical presence. The novel ends with Iris discovering an unread letter from Roman that hits her like a blade, reinforcing that words connect us across time and death. The true magic lies in humanity's effort to understand each other through language. When everything falls apart, stories preserve our humanity.